of year where we have many, many weddings. And we are blessed to attend weddings and to make Sheva Brachos and to host Sheva Brachos. And I thought maybe just given that this is the last year in our series for the marathon year that we had, and really a tremendous Yashar Koach to all of you for participating and for coming out to learn and making the time and taking the effort out to learn with us the entire year. It's not only that I hope you have grown something from the year, but also that I certainly grow tremendously when I have to prepare for the crowd that we get here. It's a very important exercise for me, and I'm very, very grateful to everyone for participating throughout the year. So I thought, given that this is the last year, let's talk about some issues of Sheva Brachos that maybe we should be aware of, because many of us, I would imagine, are at times asked to host a Sheva Brachos or to be a part of a Sheva Brachos, and we might not be aware of the things that are necessary to properly put one together. So let's begin with the following. The Gemara says in Ksubas on Daf Gimel that the Chachamim are very concerned for the respect for the dignity of a Kala, for the dignity of a woman who's getting married. And because of that, they were concerned maybe someone's going to go out with a girl and they're going to decide that, you know, let's do a shotgun wedding, let's get married right away. And they didn't want that to happen because the woman is not going to be given the dignity that she deserves. She deserves to have a wedding, she deserves to have a respectable wedding, and it's not right just to do it 1, 2, 3. So therefore the Gemara says, Shaktu Chachamim, if you look in the first on the source sheet, the Chachamim were concerned. And they made institutions because of Takanas Benos Yisrael, because they were concerned of the Jewish women. And therefore they made an institution that every man who plans to marry a woman has to take at least 3 days to make the wedding preparations properly. Now you'll say, we know today it takes many, many months. So in the days of Chazal, and you think about it in that context, and this has many different consequences, lahalacha, the way that we view a wedding today is so different than the way a wedding used to be. It used to be a man and a woman went out on a date, they decided they were going to get married, and they got engaged. They waited about 6-7 months, whatever it may have been. They weren't making wedding plans 6-7 months or a year, they were just engaged for that period of time, probably waiting till they grew up a little bit because they went out at a very young age. Then they set the wedding date for a certain time, but it wasn't, we're going to set the wedding date and everyone's going to fly in and we're hiring a caterer. No, they said, we're going to get married around this and this time. And then if things didn't work out at the time, so they pushed it off another day or two, another week, not a big deal. Again, nobody was flying in from any far distances. Nobody was coming from outside of the community, and everybody in the community contributed. This one brought the kugel and that one brought the herring, and that was the wedding. That was it. Like the way my father describes his bar mitzvah. It wasn't like today. It was, you know, they had a little kiddush after davening, kichel and herring. That was his bar mitzvah. And he seems to be fine. So again, the way weddings were back then were not the way they are today. And because of that, the Chachamim were concerned that maybe someone is not going to give enough attention to the wedding the way a wedding is supposed to be done. And therefore they said, a man has to make sure, if he plans to get married, he has to set aside at least 3 days to prepare properly for the wedding meal. Again, take for another example. Weddings today are so different. We have a challenge every so often. Again, we have women who are adults and who understand what this is, but every so often we have a chuppas nida. So we have a problem. We have a challenge. You try to schedule a wedding, and you try to do it in a way where the woman is not going to be a nida. It doesn't always work out. Doesn't always happen. And sometimes when it doesn't work out, it's unfortunate, and it's difficult, and it's uncomfortable, and the chassan, how's he supposed to put the ring on the kala's finger? And what's he supposed to do? And how can they have yichud after the wedding? It's very complicated, and halachically it's very complicated. How do we actually get married under such circumstances? Why is this more of a problem today than it ever was? Because we plan it so far in advance. So it used to be, you plan a wedding, and it turns out the woman was anida, so we'll push it off another few days. What's the big deal? It's not going to inconvenience anyone. Nobody really has to know why we're pushing it off. But today, when we plan it so far in advance, it can pose major, major problems with regard to that issue as well. So again, the nature of weddings today is not the same as it was, but what you see from the Gemara is that the Chachamim made sure to go out of their way to institute that every man must be careful to plan a wedding accordingly and to do it in the proper way to give the woman the dignity that she deserves. And therefore the Rambam says you're not allowed to make a wedding on certain days of the week because you're not going to leave yourself enough time to prepare for the wedding properly. On Erev Shabbos, I think he says, but the Rambam writes, you have to be very careful that the wedding is done in the right time of the week in order that the woman is given the dignity that she deserves. In fact, the Magen Mishnah writes, what happens if a chassan says, I'm not interested. Again, I want to marry this woman. I don't want to spend my time or money or effort or energy to go and invest in the wedding and to make the meal the way it's supposed to be. Says the Magen Mishnah, commenting on that Rambam, Kofanoso, we force the husband. If you plan to get married, and you took this girl out on a date, and you decided this is what's going to happen, and this is when we get married, and you choose that you don't want to make a meal, so he says, Kofanoso. What does it mean, Kofanoso? What do we force you to do? How expensive does the wedding have to be? So, the Achronim say very clearly, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Ksuvos, you'll be surprised, but the Gemara says, it used to be that a husband supported his wife. Used to be. So the Gemara says that we have a conflict sometimes. Not always is the economic status of the husband's family the same as the wife's. So the understanding was the couple's going to get married and they're going to be self-supporting. They're going to take care of themselves. That's assumption number one. Now what happens? So now the wife comes from a very fancy family. The husband comes from a very simple family. So what kind of support does he have to give his wife? He can say, look, you're marrying into my family. The expectation of my family is X. I don't have to pay for the expectation that you have. So the Gemara says, no. Ola imo ve'ena yoredes imo. She has to be provided for the standard that she's used to. And that is the obligation of the husband. That's what the Gemara says clearly. Again, if the couple together makes up with each other that, look, right now we're in school and we don't want to spend all this money. We don't want to live the lavish lifestyle that I was brought up in. That's a different scenario. That's where they both agree. But if the girl says, no, this is what I expected, this is what I'm used to, the Gemara says clearly a husband's obligation is to pay for the expectation of his wife that she was raised with. And it goes in the opposite direction as well. Says the Gemara, the woman always has the upper hand. Therefore, the Gemara says, if you have a woman who grows up in a simple family and the husband grew up in a very extravagant family, and now the husband says, well, at least I married a very simple girl, I won't have to provide her with so much. The Gemara says, no, the woman has a right to say, no, you have to provide for me to the standards of what all of your siblings are going to have and what all of your family is used to having. So the Gemara says that's the principle that ola imo, the woman always gets the upgrade, ve'ena yoredes imo. She never has the obligation to go down and to be tended for less than she otherwise would have expected to be treated. So that's what the Gemara says, and what you see is that we give a great focus. So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, the Gemara tells us here you have to provide a wedding meal, and you have to make sure that you do it properly. So Rav Moshe writes, what happens when you have a chassan who says, okay, I'm going to make the wedding, but I don't want to have a band. It costs me too much money. I'm not interested in having music. I don't want to have everything that you're expecting. Rav Moshe says, no, that's part of the expectation. Part of a wedding is not only that you're going to provide the meal and you're going to do it properly, but you're also going to provide that which is normal to have at a wedding of your kind of community. And therefore, Rav Moshe writes, you have an obligation to pay for the band as well. So again, the arrangements that we have today about who pays for what might be a little bit different, but this is the basic understanding of the Gemara. And what you see from here is that by a wedding itself, you have an absolute obligation to have a meal. You have an absolute obligation to have a meal. It's not negotiable. Now the question is, we've moved on from the wedding. Now we're up to the week of Sheva Brachos. And the question is, do we have an obligation to actually have a Sheva Brachos every day of the week? Is that a real obligation, the same way you have an obligation to make a meal by the wedding? Or would you say, no, Sheva Brachos is only if you have the right conditions and you have all the right components together, then we have to make a Sheva Brachos and bench in a certain way. But there is no obligation to go ahead and have a Sheva Brachos every night. So take, for example, you have a young couple gets married. The last thing they want to do is run around every night and be busy every afternoon with lunch and with dinner and with everything. They're just trying to relax a little bit. So they want to take one night off during the week. Again, it's very nice that all the friends want to make Sheva Brachos and everybody wants to contribute, but let's say they want one or two nights off. Do we not have a right to say, yes, take the night out, go do whatever you want, and don't trouble yourselves with coming to Sheva Brachos. Don't trouble yourself with the feeling that you're obligated to have a Sheva Brachos every night. So this is an important question, and the Achronim point us to the original Sheva Brachos. Where is the original Sheva Brachos learned from? Anybody know? Not from Lavan. From Lavan we do learn something, but where do we have the first institution where Sheva Brachos was recited? So Lavan, Leah, we don't have it. Nope. So it's something that should be familiar to all of us. We just read it. So the Psukim in Rus tell us that when Boaz got married to Rus, so it tells us that Vayikach Asara Ashim Meziknei Ha'ir. Boaz gathers together 10 men, 10 adult males from the community, and he gets them together. And the Gemara says, why did he gather everyone together? Why did he have to have a wedding that had 10 people there? Why couldn't he just have a wedding? Him and Rus got married. Whoever was there, whoever wasn't. Why was it anyone's business? So the Gemara says, no. From here we learn that you need to have 10 adult males in order to recite Sheva Brachos. And that's what the Gemara teaches us from the story of Boaz and Ruth. Now, from here you see that a Sheva Brachos needs to have 10 males, which is the first halacha that we need to be aware of. When you host the Sheva Brachos, you need to make sure that you have 10 men present in order to recite a Sheva Brachos.
He died the next day, so he didn't have Sheva Brachos.
So 1 second, you're ahead of me. So the Gemara says a very correct point, but just hold on a minute. So the Gemara tells us that from here we learn you need to have 10 men at a Sheva Brachos, but the Acharonim say, what Sheva Brachos were they describing there? What were they talking about? The Gemara tells us they were talking about the wedding. At the wedding itself, they had 10 men coming together to recite a Sheva Brachos. Nowhere is there an indication that Boaz gathered people together afterward to go ahead and recite the Sheva Brachos on subsequent days. And from here the Acharonim say, you see, that there is no real obligation to have Sheva Brachos every day after the wedding. The only time you have an obligation to have 10 men gathered together and reciting a Sheva Brachos is when you have the wedding itself. But after the wedding, you need conditions to come together in order to recite a Sheva Brachos, but there is no obligation to recite Sheva Brachos. In fact, the Acharonim have a fascinating discussion. What happens if you have someone who lives on a desert island? I would imagine it's an unusual circumstance, but the Acharonim discuss such a case. You have someone who lives on a desert island, and there is no way they can get a minyan. And there's only one boy and one girl, so they want to get married. Why not? May as well. So the Gemara says that you're supposed to have 10 people in order to recite a Sheva Brachos. So can this couple get married when there's no way that they can have a minyan together to recite the Sheva Brachos for their wedding? So what would you say? What? Adam and Eve did it. That's true, but it was way before the institution of Sheva Brachos. So there's a surprising comment, I believe, in the Hagos Maimoni. I haven't seen it in a while, but I believe the Hagos Maimoni writes in his commentary on the Rambam that no, if you know from the outset that you're not going to have 10 people present, you cannot have the couple get married. Which is such a shocking comment, because what are you going to tell them? They have to stay single for an extended period of time because you don't have a minyan to be there for the Sheva Brachos. I would have said the Sheva Brachos is just a side issue. The main thing is they should get married, and they should marry each other with 2 Edim. Let's say they have 2 Edim, but they don't have a minyan. So I would have said that's good enough. So this is a discussion, but basically what the Acharonim write is, although we have an obligation to make a meal and to have Sheva Brachos by the wedding per se, we have no obligation to have the Sheva Brachos on subsequent ways following the wedding. So therefore, if a couple decides they want to take a break and they don't want to have Sheva Brachos every night, every afternoon, every morning, they have every right to do so. Again, there might be people who want to host and who want to be gracious to them, but there is no real obligation for the couple to have Sheva Brachos every night. Now let's move a little bit further. When we talk about Sheva Brachos, there's a very important Gemara to be aware of. And that's a Gemara that might be surprising to some of us, but it's a Gemara in Maseches Sukkah, Daf Chaf Hei Amud Bei. So the Gemara tells us as follows. As we know, one is not allowed to get married on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Why is one not allowed to get married on Shabbos? Nope. The Gemara, that's Yom Tov. The Gemara says, Shabbos you're not allowed to get married because Gzeira Shema Yichtov. We're concerned maybe you're going to write something down. Maybe you'll fill in the ksuba. Maybe you're going to write down the checks for the weddings or whatever it might be. Therefore, the Gemara says you're not allowed to get married on Shabbos. It's a Gzeira Midrabanan. Not allowed to get married on Shabbos. In fact, because we assume it's only a Gzeira Midrabanan, it's a Din Derabanan, and it's not a strict Din Deraisa. Based on the Torah, you are allowed to get married on Shabbos. It's just a Din Derabanan that you can't. There are extenuating circumstances, again, very unusual, but extenuating circumstances where we might allow someone to actually get married on a Shabbos. For example, there was a case a long time ago that Rav Eliashiv was involved in where they had an aguna, and the problem was going to be, it wasn't a regular case of aguna, it was a case where her husband, I think, they had no children. The husband got hit by a car on a Shabbos. He was in the hospital. They knew he was very close to the end of his life. And the problem was that they had no children, which means she's not allowed to remarry until she goes ahead and gets chalitza from the brother-in-law. Problem is, the brother-in-law was a communist in Russia. So there was no way that they would be able to have the chalitza done. And they came running to Rabbi Yashiv's house on Shabbos and asked him, what do we do? We're going to have this woman who's going to be stuck. She's going to be in Aguna. Her brother-in-law is out in Russia, and there's no way we can get in touch with him. What should we do? And he somehow came up with a plan that she should marry on Shabbos. They should do a get, or on Shabbos she should marry someone else, which would invalidate her to do the chalitza to the brother-in-law. So somehow, or the husband, they should do a kiddushin for the husband with someone else, with another woman, whatever it was. So that's a very extenuating circumstance that's very unusual, highly unlikely, and that's why you need a great person like Rabbi Yashiv to come up with such a thing. But basically, you're not allowed to get married on Shabbos. On Yom Tov, you're not allowed to get married either. That's because on Yom Tov, we have a mitzvah to focus our simcha, to focus our attention and our joy on the Yom Tov itself, and we shouldn't be busy with getting married. However, there's no prohibition to get married a week before Yom Tov. There's no prohibition to get married a few days before Yom Tov. So what happens? Someone gets married. My sister had this. She got married in Israel in between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. So we had the Shavuot Brachos on Sukkot in Israel. It was beautiful. It was very nice, other than the fact that her family, his family, was able to drive to all the Shavuot Brachos, and we were keeping 2 days of Yom Tov. So we had to walk all over the place. It was interesting. But anyway, the Gemara says, so what do you do in that scenario where you have Shavuot Brachos that's being conducted on Sukkot, on Chol HaMoed Sukkot? So says the Gemara as follows. Amar Rav Abba Bar Zabda Amar Rav. Chasan V'ashush Binan V'chol B'nei Achupa, the Chasan and the Kala and all of the friends who are there to be Mesameach with the Chasan and Kala, Piturim Min HaSukkah Kol Shiva. They have no obligation to sit in the Sukkah. So the Gemara asks, no obligation to sit in the sukkah. Why should they not have to sit in the sukkah? It's a good question. So says the Gemara, my taima, mishum deboi lemechde, because right now our obligation is to rejoice with the chasan and kala. So therefore, why can't we all go to the sukkah and rejoice there? So the Gemara says, v'leichlu b'sukkah, why don't we take the whole party and eat in the sukkah? Why will that take away? And assuming we're talking about a case where you have a sukkah that's big enough to hold everyone, why shouldn't we all just go there and have the Shavuot Brachos there? The Gemara says, no, ein simcha ela b'chupa. What does that mean? The simcha can only be complete if it's in the chupa. What does that mean? So the Rishonim explain as follows. A chupa in their days did not mean what it means to us today. Today, we colloquially call a chupa a canopy with four poles. That's a chupa to us. And then we move on with life. Back in the days of the Gemara, what they did was the following. They set up like a temporary hut for the Chasan and Kala. This is where everything took place. This is where the Chasan and Kala slept the whole week. This is where they had a great time. This was their honeymoon. And it used to be at nights, they didn't travel around doing Shavuot Brachos in different people's homes. Everybody came to them at nights. So, 8 o'clock at night, we call the Shavuot Brachos. Everybody shows up with the food, whatever they prepared. They make a Shavuot Brachos in that, what we call a chuppah, in their little makeshift home. And that's where everything took place. Now, I would imagine today, Chasan and Kala would not prefer that. Right? They're setting up their apartment, they're having privacy, and now every night they're going to have to go and set up and clean up after everyone comes to their home. So nowadays we don't do that. But in the times of the Gemara, that's what they used to do. They used to have, the Chasan and Kala had their own private space. That's where they were during the day, and they weren't busy toveling all day long and, you know, doing everything that we do now during Shavuot Brachos. So they had a nice time to relax together, and then at night, everybody came together and said Shavuot Brachos in their own house, in their own apartment. The Chasan and Kala didn't travel around. So the Gemara says the only time you have real simcha is when you're doing the Shavuot Brachos in this makeshift house. After all, it was created for this purpose. So therefore, the Gemara assumes that the only time Shavuot Brachos is recited is when you're in that house, if you're now going to move it into the sukkah. Even though we're moving it together with all the friends, that's going to take away. That's not going to be a simcha, that's not going to be a Shavuot Brachos. Therefore, that takes priority, and they don't have to sit in the sukkah during the duration of Chol HaMoed. Yeah.
Don't have to, but may they do the Shavuot Brachos in the sukkah, and then do they say the bracha, they say the sukkah?
So that's a very important question that Tosus picks up on. So Tosus says, well, it would seem from here, why doesn't the Gemara give us an option that, what do you mean? I'm a God-fearing Jew. I'm a Chasan and Kala. We just got married. We want to sit in the sukkah. We don't want to sit in this house. Now we're in the middle of sukkahs. Why don't we take the party into the sukkah? We're more than happy to do that. So Tosus writes, it would seem that the only time you have a right to recite the Shavuot Brachos is when you're in that designated home of the Chasan and Kala. But when you're going to move somewhere else, for example, into the sukkah, or for example, into a restaurant like we do today, Shavuot Brachos cannot be recited. That's what Tosus writes. That's what it seems in the Gemara. Otherwise, what's the Gemara's problem? Why can't, if we all care about the mitzvah of sukkah, why can't we just take the whole party out from that house into the sukkah? Tosus says it would seem to be an indication that the only time Shavuot Brachos is allowed to be recited is when you're in that Chasan and Kala's home. However, when you take the Shavuot Brachos out of their confines and you now have it hosted in someone else's home, it would seem that you can't, which would pose a major problem. Because nowadays, this is not what we do. And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch adopts the opinion of that Gemara, the simple understanding of the Gemara, that the only time a Sheva Brachos is able to be recited is when it's performed in the home of the Chasan and Kala. But when it's done anywhere outside of that home, we assume that is not the case. You are not allowed to do it, which is the minig of the Svardim even today, I believe. The Svardim don't always do Sheva Brachos like we do. Ashkenazim follow the other opinion. Ashkenazim say, no, no, no. We assume that Sheva Brachos is done when you have other conditions, when you have people together and we're coming to celebrate the marriage of the Chasan and Kala. But we don't assume that you need that component of only being in the Chasan and Kala's home. However, the Svardim generally follow the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, and therefore they follow the opinion here that one is not supposed to have Sheva Brachos unless it is connected with the home of the Chasan and Kala, which I think is something to be aware of, because every once in a while we have friends who might be Svardim, and we have to be vigilant of the fact that not everybody agrees that Sheva Brachos can be held anywhere and everywhere. Not everybody is able to have a Sheva Brachos done and Sheva Brachos being recited. Yeah. Could be. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about it. I don't know. So the Taz writes, the Taz says, the reason why Minhag Ashkenaz, the reason why our practice is that we have adopted the other opinion, that we do it even outside of the Chasan and Kala's home, he says, because this is not the reality today. We don't have such a metzias. We don't set up a special house special for the Sheva Brachos, and that's where they stay all week, and they don't go out, and they don't go anywhere. That's not what we do. And therefore, he says, the Simcha today is when the Chasan and Kala travel around, and they go to a restaurant here, and they go to someone's house over there, and they see all the guests are coming in their honor. That's a very nice thing for them, and therefore he says that has taken over the place of that designated home for the Sheva Brachos that they used to have, and therefore he writes, nowadays we have the right to make the Sheva Brachos anywhere and everywhere as long as it's being done out of respect to the Chasan and Kala who just are celebrating their recent marriage. Okay? So now let's move on a little further. So now we figured out whether or not we have to have a Sheva Brachos in the first place. We have figured out where we are allowed to host the Sheva Brachos, depending if you're a Sephardi or an Ashkenazi. But if you'll notice, I would imagine everyone here has noticed that you've gone to a Sheva Brachos in the past, and you see we have two cups of wine. Now, what's with the two cups of wine? And then we start mixing them together, and nobody really knows where we're up to, who's supposed to get what. Where does that come from? What is that all about? So the story begins as follows. We have a Gemara in Psachim, Daf Kuf Beis Amud Beis, where the Gemara teaches us the following. The Gemara says, let's say you have somebody on a Friday afternoon who is having a big meal, and they've washed for the meal. Now, there's a major question in general, at what time on Friday afternoon are you allowed to have a big meal? You're not allowed to have a big meal whenever you want on a Friday, because you have to leave room for the Shabbos meal. So therefore, the Gemara says there are certain conditions about what exactly you're allowed to eat on a Friday, and what perhaps you're not allowed to eat on a Friday. So say, for example, says the Gemara, you started your meal very early in the day, there was no question at all, and you're having tons of guests over, and everybody's enjoying themselves, and now it's an early Shabbos, so we start the meal, let's say, 11 o'clock. We're having a pidun aben, or we're having a bris, whatever it might be. So you have the meal 11 o'clock, everyone's having such a nice time, Shabbos is at 4 o'clock, 3:30, whatever it might be. We don't have a chance to bench, and now, lo and behold, it's already Shabbos. So again, unusual for us today, but the Gemara describes such a case. And the Gemara says, now I have a problem, because I have two things that I'm obligated to do at this moment. One thing that I must do is, I have to bench, because I had this meal. Another thing I need to do is, I have to make Kiddush, because now it's Shabbos. Now, the Gemara tells us, really when a person benches with a mezumen, when you bench with a number of people, so the Gemara really says he's supposed to use a cup of wine. So the Gemara says, I have a great idea. Why not use the same cup of wine for the benching as for the Kiddush? After all, I need a cup of wine for the benching. I need a cup of wine for the Kiddush. Why not use the same cup of wine? Why should I waste two cups of wine? Nice idea, says the Gemara, doesn't work. Why not? Why do I have to use two different cups of wine? So the Gemara answers, because Ein osin mitzvos chavilos chavilos, which means, what's it going to look like if you're using one cup of wine and you're trying to chop two mitzvahs in one cup of wine? It doesn't look nice. So the Gemara says, it looks like you're just trying to get rid of your obligation. Just may as well not waste any wine, so let's just do it over one and forget about the problem. Says the Gemara, therefore, you have to make sure to use one cup of wine for benching. After you're finished with that, you take out a separate cup of wine for the Kiddush. So that's, again, an unusual case. Let's talk about a more prevalent case. For example, you have Yom Tov falls out after Shabbos. So Pesach night falls out on Matzoy Shabbos. What do we do by the Seder? How do we start off? Yak Nahaz, right? We say Havdalah and Kiddush all together. So that's called Yak Nahaz. talk about it another time, but basically the Gemara says you start off the Seder by saying Kiddush and Havdalah. You have to say Havdalah because Shabbos is over. You have to say Kiddush because now it's Pesach. So the Gemara says, what do you do then? I have two mitzvahs I have to do. One is Havdalah for Shabbos. One is Kiddush for Yom Tov. So do I have to have two cups of wine? Why not? Isn't that the same as Birchas HaMazon and Kiddush? Sounds like it. So what's the difference? So the Gemara says, really, you're right. But Kiddush and Havdalah is Chada Milsa. Kiddush and Havdalah is the same thing. It's all about the sanctity of Shabbos, sanctity of Yom Tov. It's not so different. And therefore the Gemara says, when it comes to Kiddush and Havdalah that come together, you have every right to say Kiddush and Havdalah over one cup of wine. However, when I have Birchas HaMazon for my Friday afternoon meal and Kiddush for my Shabbos meal, those two things have nothing to do with each other. Those are two totally separate mitzvahs, and therefore we assume two different cups of wine must be used for those two mitzvahs. Now let's translate that into a Shever Brachas. So what happens? We get together to celebrate a Shever Brachas, and everybody's very excited and we're having a great time. Now it comes time to bench, so we take a cup of wine for the benching. Yeah, but we also need a cup of wine for the Shever Brachas. So how do you view that? Is benching and Shever Brachas considered like Kiddush and Havdalah? It's the same thing. It's all just one extension of one mitzvah. Or do you say, no, that's like Birchas HaMazon and Kiddush. Two totally different things. So maybe we should assume you need two different cups of wine. That's where the story begins. And let's read together number Gimel on the source sheet, where Tosis discusses the issue. And Tosis says the following. Yesh nagim mitam zeh. Besuda shabechupa. When you have a meal that celebrates a marriage, shelo lomar shever brachas al koz birchas hamazon. Tosis writes, you should not say birchas hamazon and shever brachas with one cup of wine. Ela meviim koz acher. You have to bring a separate cup of wine because here you're presented with two different mitzvahs in front of you that you need to perform. One is the mitzvah of benching. One is the mitzvah of shever brachas. That is similar to when a person has a big meal on Friday afternoon and now you have to bench and you also have to make kiddush, which we assume requires two cups of wine. So that's what Tosis writes. Two cups are required for Shever Brachas. However, skip down a line, he says, Ach Rabbeinu Meshulam. He says, I have a good friend named Rabbeinu Meshulam, one of the Balei Tosis, who says, Hakol Akos Echad Shel Birchas HaMazon. No, no reason to have two different cups of wine. Everything can be said on one. Why is that? Why should that be the case? Why should one cup of wine suffice for both Birchas HaMazon and Shever Brachas? So the later Achronim, more contemporary Achronim, got into that discussion and said, well, it would seem to be a machlokas here, it would seem to be a disagreement as to the nature of Shever Brachas. Do we assume that Shever Brachas is simply an extension of the Birchas HaMazon? Or do you assume that Shever Brachas is a separate entity on its own? So take for example, when I sit down to eat a meal on Shabbos, right? So part of my obligation by sitting down to eat that meal is, now that I have washed, I have an obligation to say an extended Birchas HaMazon that includes Ritzei. When I sit down to eat a meal on Chanukah, part of my obligation when I sit down to have that meal on Chanukah is, I'm going to say Birchas HaMazon, not the regular way, but I'm going to say the extended Birchas HaMazon, which is Al Anisim inclusive. What about when I sit down to a Shever Brachas? Perhaps, the Achronim say, maybe by sitting down to Shever Brachas and washing, I have now taken upon myself to say, not a regular Birchas HaMazon, but a more expansive Birchas HaMazon, which includes the Shever Brachas as well. It might actually be a part of the benching itself. And the Briska Rav, one second, we'll get to this in a minute. The Briska Rav proves it from the Rambam. The Rambam, as we know, we'll get to all the questions. The Rambam, as we know, writes a sefer called the Yad HaChazaka, which is all about the halachos of every area of life. And the Rambam was so careful and so meticulous exactly how he codified the halacha and where he decided to categorize each halacha. Now here, you'll notice, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Brachos, he has a whole section where he talks about the laws of benching. So he says, if you're benching on Shabbos, you say Ritzei. If you're benching on Yom Tov, you say Yalaviyav. If you're benching on Chanukah, you say Al Anisim. If you forget Al Anisim, if you forget Ritzei, he goes through all the halachas. And then, in the middle of all that, he says, and when you're benching at a Shever Brachos, you should also say Shever Brachos. Why does the Rambam put that here? Shouldn't that be in the laws of getting married, in the laws of Shever Brachos, in the laws of Kiddushin V'Nisuin, something like that? Why does the Rambam choose to outline the halachos of Shever Brachos Here, when he's talking about Hilchas Berachas HaMazon, says the Brisker Rav, it would seem to be a clear indication that Sheva Brachas is an extension of the benching itself. It's similar to Ritzei, to Yala V'Yavo, to Ala Nisim. So too, when you sit down to a Sheva Brachas, you have an obligation to say not just the regular benching, but also the more inclusive benching, which includes the Sheva Brachas as well. And this is going to have major consequences, lahalacha. As we mentioned, number one, do you need 2 cups of wine, or does 1 cup of wine suffice? If you assume that Sheva Brachas is a totally separate entity, it's a separate mitzvah, well then maybe you should assume that 2 cups of wine are necessary. But if you assume that no, Sheva Brachas is just one long extension of the Birchas HaMazon for this occasion of the Sheva Brachas that we're celebrating, then perhaps 1 cup of wine suffices. And this is why, in order to try to satisfy both opinions, we have 2 cups of wine, and then we try to mix them together, that everybody should have a little bit from both cups of wine. This is how that came about. Now, this discussion has very fundamental halachic consequences. Number one, I would imagine we've all been to a Sheva Brachas, and sometimes the benching drags on, and then they start pouring the wine, and they're trying to figure out who we're going to give this bracha to, and who we're going to give that one, and everyone starts singing, and by that time, all the women are probably talking, and all the men are probably not paying attention, and everybody's on their phones. Well, the question is, if you assume that the Sheva Brachas is considered an integral part of the Birchas HaMazon, well then, what right do you have to talk in the middle before the completion of the Sheva Brachas? And this is a discussion that the Achronim raise. Maybe a person has to be careful that when you come to a Sheva Brachas and it's time to bench, you have to pay attention not only to the benching and not speak till the benching is over, but also you have to make sure not to speak until the Sheva Brachas are completed as well, which is something I would imagine most people are not so careful about, but it's something that the Achronim raise, and based on the introduction that we gave, it makes a lot of sense. Because if you assume that the Sheva Brachas is just an extension of the benching, well, the same way you wouldn't dare talk in the middle of benching before you say Ritzei or before you say Yala V'Yavo or Ala Nisim, so too you don't have a right to talk in the middle of benching before you recite the Sheva Brachas. So now you're going to have people in the room are going to recite the Sheva Brachas on behalf of everyone. We're all going to answer Amen. We all have an equal obligation to say the Sheva Brachas. Just one person does it on behalf of all of us. So therefore we assume that perhaps we should say a person is not allowed to speak, is not allowed to be mafsik at all until we have finished the entire Sheva Brachas. Yeah. So I think that's a very important question. Women are equally, as far as I understand it, women are equally obligated in Sheva Brachas. The same way, let's say, for example, it's something a lot of women don't know. Let's say when we have a mezuman at a table, right? So the assumption in Shulchan Aruch is that women, again, the Shulchan Aruch writes, women are allowed to make their own mezuman if the women are eating by themselves. Let's say women are eating together with men, so it says the men make the mezuman and the women have an equal obligation to answer. A woman is not allowed to go and bench on her own when you have a mezuman at the table. So again, even though she might not lead the mezuman under those circumstances, but the woman has an obligation to participate in the mezuman that's being performed at her meal, at her table. And the same goes over here. If a woman chooses to participate in a Sheva Brachas, big discussion whether or not a woman is able to make the brachas or not. That's a major discussion, a very contemporary discussion. What?
That's the basis for my question.
So that's a big question, whether or not a woman is able to. It's not a joke of a question. It's a very serious question that actually is a tremendous amount of contemporary literature about. Should we assume that a woman is able to recite one of the Sheva Brachas or not? But be it as it may, whether or not that's the case, we assume a woman certainly has an obligation, I think, to be a part of the Sheva Brachas, whether or not she's going to be the one reciting it. The same way a woman has an obligation to be a part of the mezuman, even if she might not be the one reciting the mezuman per se. Yeah.
The difference is, though, with Sheva Brachas, it's after the benching. It's not inserted within the benching.
Mm-hmm.
So it's benching and Sheva Brachas.
Right.
It's not exactly the same as it. So what, to me, that makes it more.
So that's the question. That's the basis of the question. Should we assume it's just totally separate, or do we assume it's a part of the whole thing? We'll give more. We'll flesh this out a little more. Hopefully, it'll become clearer. Any other questions before we move forward? No? Yeah.
And I just want to point out that the beginning of benching is different when we have Sheva Brachas also.
Yeah, but that's really a minhag. That's not really al pi halacha. Like the Gemara never talks about the beginning of the benching that we say. That's just something that developed over time. So now, let's say, take for example another issue that comes up that I think people are probably not so aware of, but it's important to think about. Take for example, a wedding takes place on a Sunday afternoon. So when's the last day of Sheva Brachos? Higher mathematics? Shabbos, 7 days later. When is the last Sheva Brachos on Shabbos? Usually, Shalosh Shudas. So, when are you allowed to make Sheva Brachos? Only during the 7 days. So what if Shalosh Shudas goes past the Shkia, which it often does? What? So what are you arguing? You're arguing that the same way on a regular Shabbos when there's no Sheva Brachos, same way on a regular Shabbos when I want to have Shalosh Shudas, I'm allowed to say Ritzeh even after the Shkia, even after Shabbos is over, so too I should be allowed to recite the Sheva Brachos on a Shabbos afternoon even though I'm benching after the Shkia. That is not correct. It is not correct because we assume the reason why you're able to say Ritzeh after Shabbos is over is because we have a concept called Tosefes Shabbos. It means you have an ability to add Shabbos into another week. So you can take Shabbos in early on Friday. You can keep Shabbos in late after Shabbos is over. Therefore, you have a right. Let's say you want to make Kiddush on an early Shabbos before it's dark outside. You have every right to do that. You want to bench before it's dark outside on Friday afternoon. No problem, says the Gemara. Why? Because we assume it's considered Shabbos. However, when it comes to Sheva Brachos, there's no such thing as Tosefes Sheva Brachos. 7 days is 7 days, and therefore we assume once the seven-day period is over, Sheva Brachos cannot be recited. So here's the problem. I get a caterer, and I have a beautiful Shalosh Shudas set up, and everybody's late because everybody was taking a nap. Now we all show up, and there's no way we're going to get to the benching before the Shkia. So what should I do? I should throw out all the food in the garbage? I prepared such a beautiful Suda, so listen what happened. Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank writes in one of his Sfarim, he was one of the great Gedolim in Yerushalayim, so he writes the following story. Look at number Vav. Tzvi Pesach Frank tells us that he had a story that took place by the Sheva Brachos of his own nephew. B'nisuin shel ben achi harav agon Reb Zev sheyichya. He said, my nephew, the son of my brother, got married. Shahaya b'yom harishon. And the wedding took place on a Sunday, which meant Shabbos haya yom hashvi, which meant that Shabbos was the seventh and final day of Sheva Brachos. V'karav hadaber. And it seemed to me, as we were sitting down to the Sheva Brachos for Shalosh Shudas, it seemed to me, it seemed to me that this Sheva Brachos was going to extend way after Shabbos was over, and we're going to have a problem. What should we do? So benching is going to take place after Shabbos is over. So no problem, we can say Ritzeh, but what do we do about the Sheva Brachos? Amar ben Achi Haravagon Reb Feivel. He said, one of my nephews, Reb Feivel, I don't know who it is, got up and he said the following. He says, I want to make an announcement. We're in the middle of the meal, and it's soon going to be the Shkia, and we're not going to be able to make Sheva Brachos anymore. Therefore, right now in the middle of the meal, I'm going to pick up a cup of wine, we're going to pass the cup around, we're going to make the Sheva Brachos in the middle of the meal, in order to be sure that we don't miss the opportunity. Sounds like a great idea, and he says that's what they did. And this was rejected by all who heard about the story. Because they said, as we mentioned, Sheva Brachos has to be a part of the benching. We assume it's an extension of the benching. And the same way we assume that Ritzeh and Yalav Yavo and Al HaNisim is a part of an extended benching on those very special days of the year, so too when it comes to a Sheva Brachos, we assume the nature of benching is completely different. And therefore we would assume that the only time Sheva Brachos can be recited is when it's in the context of a benching as well. You cannot just get up in the middle of a meal and say, oh, well now, since we're going to miss the Shkia and we're not going to be able to say Sheva Brachos after Shkia, therefore we should make sure to just say Sheva Brachos right in the middle of everything here in the middle of the meal. So that is another important consequence that we should probably be aware of, because often that scenario comes up, that you have somebody on Shabbos afternoon and they don't realize that the Sheva Brachos has to end in time. Yes? I'm listening. That's correct.
Okay,
so far you're correct. But if you have the proper conditions and you get everyone together, then we assume
within that 7 day period of time it has to conclude before.
Correct. If, again, there's no obligation to have Sheva Brachas, but once we convene a Sheva Brachas and we get everyone together, now there are rules and regulations of when the Sheva Brachas is allowed to be recited. So this is consequence number two. Number three, and this is going to bother a lot of people, I know in advance, but just hear me out. Another extremely relevant question is the following. I go to a wedding. I don't plan to be there till the end of the wedding. I would imagine most of us go to weddings and don't plan to be there till the end of the wedding. So what happens? I sit down at this wedding and I wash. Do I now have an obligation to say the extended benching? Why not? So 1 second. When I sit down at a meal, right? When I sit down at a meal and it happens to be Hanukkah, I've taken upon myself, by sitting down at this meal on Hanukkah, I've taken upon myself that I'm going to say the special benching for today, which is benching plus Alanisim. Let's translate that into our scenario. I come and I sit down by a wedding and I wash. Does that not mean that I have now signed myself up to say the extended benching, including Sheva Brachos? And since you need a minion for the Sheva Brachos, you can't leave till the end. Problem. Look at Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein discusses the issue in number Zion. And Rav Moshe argues, Chiyuv HaSheva Brachos Achar Asuda. The obligation of reciting Sheva Brachos at the end of a wedding meal is Al Kol HaOchle Misuda Sachupa, on all of those who are participating in the meal. Va'af Al Elu She'ein Ron Esachas and Va'akala. Even if you happen to be sitting in the side room, but your again, this is relevant to the times of the Gemara where they didn't have catering halls like we have. So they had five homes next to the home of the Chasan and Kala. All of them were served a meal. I happen not to be sitting in the home of the Chasan and Kala, but I'm a participant in the meal. So I say Sheva Brachos there as well. Says Rav Moshe v'nimtza, and it turns out, She'ein Rasha'in Latzeis Kodem Shemevarchem HaSheva Brachos. What do I do? What do? I come to the wedding already before the chuppah. Now I'm going to be stuck here until 12, 1 o'clock at night until they bench, until they have all the last Sheva Brachos? So this is a big problem. Or, he says, your second option is, if you're sitting at a table and there happen to be 10 men around, so gather a minion together and say the Sheva Brachos. Now, Rav Moshe himself agrees that that's not really the respectful thing to do. So what do? So Rav Moshe points out, you got a problem, because really, when you sit down to such a meal, we assume that you've now signed yourself up not only to bench, but also to bench including Sheva Brachos. So what do? I don't want to be here for the rest of the night. So Rav Moshe says, well, option one is... One second. Option one, says Rav Moshe, is get a minion together and do the Berachas HaMazon with Sheva Brachos. But he says that's not really very nice to the Baal Simcha. They don't think that's a proper thing to do. And if you know the Baal Simcha is going to be annoyed by such a thing, or if people are going to think it's strange, not a good idea. But what do? So Rav Moshe says, option number two is, you can sit down to the meal and wash and say explicitly that I am washing, but I don't plan to be a part of everybody else in this room. So again, the same way if I happen to find myself in a room with Hassan and Kala, let's say they go out for lunch one day of their Sheva Brachos, and I happen to be in the same restaurant and I'm sitting at the table next to them, it doesn't obligate me. We don't have 10 people who came together to celebrate a Sheva Brachos. So to over here, I can say before I sit down, I have no intent at all of staying till the end of this wedding. I don't want to be a part of everybody else in this room, and therefore I'm washing, and I plan to bench on my own, and I don't want to be stuck here till 1 o'clock in the morning. That, Rav Moshe says, works. Now, I would imagine not everybody always has the presence of mind to think of that at the time that they're washing and sitting down to eat. Well, do I want to be a part of it? Do I don't? So, option number three is, don't wash. Now, don't wash is a very complicated issue. It's not complicated because of Sudas Mitzvah. It's more complicated because, what else are you eating in this meal? So I will tell you, I was at a wedding recently, and I had no plans on staying at all. I was really there for a very short period of time. But I danced a little bit, then I sat down. I happened to be sitting. Rabbi Feiner came and sat down right next to me. So he asked me, oh, what's doing? We started to talk. And he said to me, oh, are you on your way out? I said, yes. So he says, oh, so, you know, did you wash? Did you bench? He starts talking to me about this whole issue. I said, no, I didn't wash. He says, so how are you eating what you're eating? I said, what do you mean? So he turns to me and he says, don't you see what they're serving? It was like a big puff pastry with the mushroom sauce and the whole thing. He says, who said that's not hamotzi? So this is exactly, that's a very complicated issue and one needs to be very careful. You take, for example, the Shulchan Aruch even writes, and again, it's unusual for us to think in such a way, but the Shulchan Aruch writes, We have a concept called pas, we have something called bread, and then we have something called pas haba b'kisnim, which means it's like sort of a snack, but if you eat enough of it, you have to wash on it. So take, for example, the example that's given by the contemporary Svarim, and it's basically an offshoot of what the Shulchan Aruch himself says. Let's say I have lunch one day, and I don't want to wash. I have the same phobia as everybody else in the room. I don't like to wash. I don't like the bench, right? So I don't want to wash. So what do? I make tuna fish, and I take it with crackers. Do you know that the Shulchan Aruch says, if you eat that as a meal, you have to wash on those crackers, even though it's just crackers? Why? Because that's in that middle category of secondary. Again, if you're just having a little snack is one thing. And again, you have to eat enough crackers, it says, that would be the equivalent of the amount of a sandwich that you would put on the tuna fish. So, which is not that much. I would imagine most people who eat tuna fish with crackers are probably eating enough crackers that it's the same amount as you would eat bread. You just don't want to wash and you don't want to bench. So the Shulchan Aruch would seem to say clearly in a case like that, that that would require a Netilas Yadayim and a Birchas Hamazon. And therefore, I think it's very important that you be aware when you go to a wedding and you choose to opt out. I don't want to be involved because I don't want to get into the Sheva Brachas problem, and I don't want to have the problem of staying till the end of the wedding, so you know what, I'm not going to wash. Well, just make sure that everything that you're consuming, everything that you're eating, is not actually requiring a Hamotzi. Rabbi Feiner brought it to my attention for the first time. I never really thought of it. You know, we go many different places and we eat something quickly, or you take a, you know, Franks and Blanks or something, and you eat something, you have a little piece of a deli roll, and you don't realize maybe that requires a hamotzi. It's very complicated. Maybe we'll have to work on Hilchos Brachos another time. But I'm just pointing out that there is a lot to think about with regard to that. Yes?
Is